Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth. Truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation. I am your host, Brent Hand, and we are heading back into the land of aliens this week. That makes 2 weeks in a row. And like always, I'm coming to you from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago. And if it seems slightly quieter than usual right now, it's because I duped David into taking the bots in for their checkups. In reality, we just take them to AutoZone, let them pick out something for themselves, but we call it a checkup. But have no fear. Oh, no, kids. I am not alone.
His name is
Kevin
Crispin.
Kevin, you're here again.
I am.
I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I am, buddy. But again, I get reminded of my name. And you know, before you said the stuff about the AutoZone, I was hoping when you said taking the bots in for their checkups, that meant that at least C-Bot was going to be put down.
Get in the zone. We can try.
I don't think he can die.
I will never die.
Yeah. He's a real motherfucker.
He is a fucker of mothers.
Well, yes. And as you know, I only agreed to come on this because you said he was going to be.
You and him do not get along very well.
No, fuck him. Sorry. I'm over.
And
I'm
it costs fine. A lot to ship him out to Colorado just for him to take him.
Does he complain about how he's shipped? Does he have to be like first class?
No, we just tell him it's first. We tell him it's first class. He doesn't have any idea.
And he
what
just
it is
in a box.
UPS says that if it happens another quote unquote incident, they're just going to stop doing it. So,
well, the final warning there.
Yes,
I'm sure he'll heed it.
Kevin.
Yeah.
I got a question.
Ready?
Do aliens, UFOs, and the like grab your attention? Is this something I know? I mean, you're on this show and we talk about things, but mm-hmm. do they grab your attention or? Do you dismiss them usually when you hear about them in the news and stuff as nonsense or just something you're not interested in?
For most of my life, I think it's been the latter.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably changing. Not to say that my belief about them changes, but mm-hmm. I also have to, I'm trying my best to understand that, objective, subjective reality, all of these things could play a part in this, and I don't know everything. So maybe I don't know shit about UFOs and aliens, so I'm much more open. Maybe. I'm much more open to hearing about it than I was, say, when I was in high school and got...
That's great. I mean, that is literally all I ask. When I wanted to do this show, and I've also said, when John and I started,
mm-hmm.
we were on polar sides of this thing where John didn't believe anything, and I probably believe more than I should. And we met in the middle, and that's why I wanted to get with David, as we were kind of in the middle of, after doing it, I became more suspicious of things and more believing of things in a good way, and so did John. There is always room for skepticism, but don't shut yourself off.
Yeah, and it's real easy to do that, for sure, because it's one less thing to talk about.
Optimistic skepticism.
Think about,
skeptically optimistic.
Well, I'm not optimistic about anything, bro.
Well... Optimistic Prime. Roll out if it's okay with you.
How respectful.
Very respectful. But speaking of respectful, we got to be respectful for the time of our guest. And we have someone joining us this week who is fully grabbed by the UFO phenomenon, or the UAP phenomenon, as I should. One Mr. Ryan Sprague. Kevin, Tell us about Ryan. Give us his 411.
You got it, man. Ryan Sprague is the creator and host of Somewhere in the Skies podcast, which has hit, ready for this, number one on Apple Podcasts and was awarded Best UFO Podcast in 2021 and 2022 in the Paranormality Podcast Awards.
We were winners also. Excuse me.
You okay?
You got that chicken bone?
Chicken bone. Mm. Well, back to what you asked me to talk about. He is a TV series regular on Ancient Aliens and a lead investigator and co-host of the hit CW series Mysteries Decoded. He's also the author of the best-selling book Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to the UFO Phenomenon, which was recently implemented into required reading for college courses at Webster University and Mercyhurst University.
That is really fucking cool.
That is cool, man.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get my diary in to, as required reading, but they can't get the lock. They can't pick the lock on it.
The only one that wants it is the FBI. It's weird.
Sprague also writes for the Science and Defense News site, The Debrief. Speaking on UFOs, he has been interviewed on ABC News and 7 News Australia.
Notice it wasn't Fox News like me, so screw this guy. Fox.
God damn it, Brent. Fox. I'm not talking about you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I get so confused.
May I continue?
You may.
All right, thank you.
The floor is yours.
Oh, is it? All right. You know, Ryan's been featured in Vice, Newsweek, and the New York Post, as well as in various documentaries. He's consulted for Amblin Entertainment. That's Steven Spielberg's company, buddy. Entertainment One and Discovery Plus, which I think we just call Max now.
Yeah.
And
now get to the good part. Get to the good part.
All right. Andy has spoken on panels at events with Brent Hand. So you know he is legit and you can forget all that other crap I said before that. I didn't write that part. God, I strenuously object. I'm calling my attorney. Ryan was born and raised in New York. He currently resides, get this, in Scotland, ooh, which is cool as hell, and is a proud member of UAP Media UK.
Yeah, that's cool. So he is legit, and he's so legit, like I said, I've allowed him on stage with me at different things, including AlienCon. That's a dual sigh right
that's
there.
That's right, baby.
All right, we're going to go to break real quick, and we come back. He's going to class us, join up a little bit on Hysteria 51.
Thank God. Can we move to Scotland?
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
That's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? If you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get now. Started. For a very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today.
You know, Brent, the worst part of these breaks is that while the audience gets a break from you, I do not.
I just sit and stare in silence while they don't realize that.
Yeah, for 4 hours. They're 4 hour breaks.
Yeah, I think that gets lost in translation.
Sofia Coppola?
I do not blink, and it's very unsettling.
It's very weird. Probably because you don't have eyelids.
Speaking of unsettling, Ryan Sprague is back on the show. Ryan!
What's up, guys?
What a triumphant entrance.
How's it going?
You're welcome.
I know. I felt like I'm the next big thing in WWE. That was a hell of a way to open. Now I just have to live up to
it. You are trying to get on Kevin's good side, talking about
wrestling. I love pro wrestling.
Hey, man, Money in the Bank, London, tomorrow.
Are you going?
Nice.
I tried to get tickets. It sold out before I could get them.
Yeah.
And then I had the option to do the SmackDown, but I wasn't able to get that either. So,
oh, man, I'm
clearly it wasn't meant to be.
So,
but,
so pretty time. Much your worthless is their takeaway from that exchange.
Oh, there. Absolutely. Gotcha. I'm just another one of these saps that's going to watch it on Peacock Plus or whatever.
Well, speaking of London, you're not too far from there. You're in Scotland now. How the hell goes it? I asked you before we started, how are kilts treating you? How is the clean dangle hanging, you know, or whatever you want to, the no panty brigade treating you?
It is the most liberating thing ever, Brent. But, you know, we're not 17, 18, 20 years old anymore. So I got to be careful with how much little support I give down there.
You ain't lying. There's the some things never stop growing. We're not going to say what I'm talking about. That's as far as we're going with that. But Ryan is back on the show. And of course, you're back because you've got a book out. You got another book because fuck all of us. You just keep writing books. It's kind of rude of you, but you know, that's
it
fine.
Is kind of rude. Thank you, Brent.
This is really cool. This book is a culmination of experiences from people of all walks of life. And it's also a culmination of kind of like your life's passion. And that started when you were young and you had your own experience. I think we've talked about this before, and I haven't with Kevin on here. Can you give us a breakdown, like what happened when you were young and how it kind of drove you to this road in life?
Yeah, sure. I've got my kind of Peter Parker moment to all this UFO stuff. It was 1995, and I actually had my own personal, what I consider a UFO encounter. This happened in central New York, and it was in the summer. And, you know, I'd go on this like weekend getaway with my parents every summer. We looked forward to it, where we'd go stay at this motel called the Fisherman's Wharf, again, up in central New York. And right off the motel was a dock where you could fish or, you know, take your boats out over the St. Lawrence River. And I would fish. I fished for hours. I loved it. You know, even at age 12, I was already an 80-year-old man out there with like fishing pole. And it was getting dark one night after I was fishing. So I started reeling my line in and I saw these, what I thought were lights in the water. So I kind of bend over, look down in the water, and I realize it's a reflection. So I flip over on the dock, and I was just staring straight up at something. I'll never probably truly know what it was, but it was, by every definition, a UFO. It was three white lights in a perfect equilateral triangle and a red light in the middle, kind of this, you know, prototypical triangular UFO, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do make it clear to people, I never saw like a machine or, you know, little gray or green men piloting this thing or anything like that. It was just a perfect formation, triangular formation of lights. And I couldn't see anything behind it. And that's what kind of shook me. You know, the stars were out, the moon was out, but I couldn't see it. They were all blocked out.
All of the stars in the, like, it's like they disappeared and all you saw were these lights. You're saying that.
Exactly.
How big were these lights? Can you give us an idea of that?
So I tried, this thing was so huge.
It was, you know, bigger than a Walmart.
Thank you for chiming in there, Travis.
Travis Walton. I can always depend on him for sure. When words fail me, there will always be Travis Walton.
Sorry for letting him jump in there.
I loved it, man. It probably won't be the last time either. But I would say it was not as big as a Walmart. Maybe the garden section of a Walmart.
Oh, just the garden section? I mean, that's pretty just damn big.
It's still pretty darn big. But yeah, man, I couldn't tell you how high up it was or how big
it's
this
so hard to speculate that
was.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I know everyone wants to know how big anything is, but when something's in the air, it's so hard to tell, you know, especially at night. Like, is it close? Is it far? You know, it's all speculation.
Yeah, and I'm sure if it's something like sounds like something I've never seen, how do you quantify that, right?
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Like, I was 12. I was clearly no aviation expert, but I knew that whatever that thing was, like, it made no sound.
That's not.
And I knew that was
here.
Not right.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That was wrong in all you know what I did know at that time. Planes made noise. I didn't know what it was, and it terrified me. I kind of yelled or squealed, I should say, for my father, who was inside the motel watching a New York Yankees game, actually. And he like would not come outside until finally, like I said, get out here, get out here. And he runs out. He thinks I fell in the water. So once he gets to the edge of the dock, he saw it too. So
that's cool. Yeah,
it was awesome, man. Like I knew I had someone else there, let alone my father, my protector to be there. But
see, he almost didn't see it. Yankees running more shit for people. So
I know, yeah. Dude, nothing would get him away from those baseball games. But this UFO did it. And we all saw it. But he was just like me. He kind of just stood there paralyzed, staring up and not being able to really explain what we were looking at. And that stayed with me. Mm-hmm. That kind of that look on my dad's face and knowing that he could not explain to his son
kind of like
what
a
was happening.
Defining moment in your life. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. Well, exactly.
And just playing off that real quick, there's kind of like in talking to the people we've had in the past talk about these things, there's like three ways people take it. There's the and they don't really care, which blows my mind. There's the people that don't want to talk about it. Like, I didn't see nothing, you know? Or there's like you where it's like, holy shit, this changes everything. And yes. I'm always, it fascinates me the way people go down any of those roads, you know? And I'm glad you picked the one you did, though.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, yeah, and that's kind of where my eventual work led me, which I'm sure we'll get to, but that reaction and response to these things is what intrigues me most. It's it's like not even what the actual UFO is. I mean, at that age, I didn't know what a UFO was. I hadn't read about them. I hadn't really seen movies or, you know, the X-Files was just becoming a thing back in 95 or whatever when I saw this. And I just had nothing to compare it to. So I kind of lived with that mystery for years after that of not knowing and kind of being petrified. Like I had nightmares about that fucking triangle every single night. And it just started to really eat away at me. And I couldn't really talk to anyone about it. Like
well,
my
that's
friends
the truth.
Made fun of me.
Exactly. And, I haven't seen that. So I'm going to make you feel like shit.
Yep. Exactly. Dude. So it was a very lonely kind of adolescence. I'm not going to lie. Like, I did sports. I went to school and then I had this UFO thing in the back of my mind constantly. And eventually, you know, I started reading about it, books in the library, early advent of the internet, AOL, chat rooms and all that stuff. And it was off to the races after that.
Yeah.
How long were you having these nightmares? And I might have missed you saying the exact timeline.
Mm-hmm. So age 12 is when I had the sighting in the summer. I would say for about a year straight.
Wow.
Actually, I had almost every single
That means
night.
It's just on in your mind, you know, right below the surface. Your psyche's trying to figure out what that was or make sense of it. And that's why you're doing that. It's not crazy. It's realistic to think that that's a response, you know, because it doesn't matter if you're 12 or 50. When you see something you don't understand, you want to, hopefully you want to understand it.
Right. And
now we all know it was just Starlink and you were just being crazy. So,
exactly. Damn you, Elon Musk.
So how long did it take you, would you say, to come forward with that info in the beginning, you know, to talk about it and then B, decide that that's what you want to do to focus on, not just as research, but it's become your life's career, I would even say.
Yeah. So I kind of, I didn't talk about my personal UFO sighting to anyone. Honestly, the only people who knew were my parents, my grandfather, and, you know, again, a couple of my friends who I told about it, and they were the ones to kind of, you know, laugh it off and make fun of me about it. And I really did my UFO research secretly. Like, again, I'd go to the library, I'd take out, like, whatever, the latest Encyclopedia Brown book.
Yeah, you're hiding for it. What is he doing?
Yeah, like, my parents probably thought I was hiding, like,
why can't you just do drugs like a normal kid?
Yeah. But UFO books were my gateway drug. I'm telling you, like, those are the books I was hiding under the mattress and stuff like that.
I remember reading Alien Agenda and being like, whoa. Like, you know, and that's a Jim Mars book, and it's not perfect in any way. But that was an early one I remember reading and being like, I really want to get into this.
How old were you about, do you recall?
Well, it wasn't the first book I read. I read that in college, and that was when I was like, I really want to, like, dip into this world of weird.
Yeah.
And I remember it was one of the first books like that I read, like, twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, my first one was Crash at Corona. About the Roswell UFO crash. And that's when, like, again, just like you, Brent, my world just opened up. Cause I'm like, okay, I saw a UFO. Fine. Other people have seen UFOs. Interesting. But they're crashing on our planet. Yeah. Like, that was a whole next level thing for me. And it just, again, I just became obsessed after that. And I conducted my first interview with a UFO witness 1 year later when I was 13.
Wow.
And, that's when I knew that's what I wanted to do.
It's not a competition, Dick. You can calm down.
I know.
Well,
know.
You're like, it's like a humble brag
there.
Judd Apatow, right? When he was a kid, he would like go interview comedians because he knew that's kind of what he wanted to do. There's a parallel there, and that's pretty fucking cool.
It was interesting, you know, and again, this was a Vietnam veteran, nonetheless, a UFO sighting over the Pacific Ocean during wartime. And I was the first and last person he ever told this to.
Wow. He
died like months after telling me this story. And like, again, I was 13. I didn't know what the hell to do with that information. Like I was honored, but I was also like, what do I do now? So I did what any kid would do. I wrote a book report about it and I handed it into my elementary school teacher.
Yeah.
And that was kind of my outlet to get this information out there, was to like one teacher and like 10 students. But it just grew and grew from there. And I started going around my city and interviewing people and then all over the country. And then eventually now some 30 plus years later, all over the world. And it's just been an incredible journey since then.
Amen. Right. And to be able to see something that, well, a goal like that to fruition, maybe you didn't even realize as a goal, it was a kind of like a need, like, I want to do this, I need to do this. And then to be able to do it is amazing. And then you've channeled this into book. Is this your third book now?
Yes, this will be my third book. The first two are kind of the same book. I revised the first one, added about 80,000 words. So it's basically a new book. I don't know why I just didn't write it.
Yeah, 80,000 words. That's no joke.
That's like a whole book in itself. Right. I know. But this one that came out recently would be my third. Yes.
So this one I guess I want to ask how it came to reality. Is it something you wanted to do, you know, you had wanted to write for a long time? Or is this something that manifested because of all the numbers of experiences or experiencers that started coming to you and telling you their stories? Was it, you know, the cart before the horse or the horse before the cart or whatever you want to call it?
The hort.
They're very.
I hate when my hort gets in front of my cart.
Damn hort. Always. I mean, so I guess my work would eventually culminate into the book where I did travel around the United States and interview people in all walks of life about their UFO sightings. And after that book came out, I can't tell you how many more people came to me after that.
I have with their own UFO stories. I mean, how great is that? You kind of became like an archivist of sorts, you know?
Yes.
For better or worse. I'm against not, your will or not.
I know. I was thrust into this position, but I take a lot of pride in that, because many people, including myself, never had anywhere to go to really tell these stories and not be judged about them. And also to not have someone try to tell you what you saw. Like, I'm not a MUFON field investigator. I'm not out there to debunk your sighting.
That's not why I like you. Sorry.
Thanks, man.
Sorry. Thank you. throwing some shade. No, sorry.
I just want to hear the stories.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what
I
want to
hear your story. Like, what did this do to you? What was your experience?
And, kind of thing? Yeah, that's one of the things that I think makes the part, you know, the book work is, even if you're not, say, into UFOs or what do we call them now?
UAPs.
UAPs. even if you're not into those, you can see that this is a community of people who have had experiences that for whatever reason, they have felt ashamed to share. And you can almost feel the relief in their words as they are related in the book. Probably very much like, you know, a 12-year-old Ryan who's having that nightmare every night. It's like, finally, I can tell somebody about this and people are going to take me seriously.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. It's all about normalizing it, I think. And the more people who come forward, the more this topic does become destigmatized. I mean, it is right now. UFOs are bigger than ever. They're more accepted widely more than ever. And that's kind of where
UFOs
we're at.
Bigger than the Beatles, I think, is what you could say.
You can eat a dick, Brent.
He's a huge Beatles fan, so I got to get a barb in whenever I can.
You're a piece of shit, Brent.
You are right, though, man. And
John Lennon had a UFO sighting himself. Sorry, had to squeeze that one in there.
Brent.
It was a big... No, I can't make that joke.
Stop.
Never mind.
Stop. Ryan, I'm sorry.
So you get all these people, they tell you their stories, whether they've called in or left, you know, these things to your show, send them in, you've traveled, you've talked to people. How do you pick and choose? Like, what's the process for putting all these in the book when you have this vast catalog, if you want to call it that? And how did you settle on what you wanted to do?
Right. Yeah. So, for any of your listeners who don't know, I run a podcast called Somewhere in the Skies where you can call in and tell your UFO stories. And I've got at least 28, I think, volumes of this series now, where each volume has like 5 to 8 stories in them of people who've told me about their UFO encounters. And
the
we're
occasional
talking hundreds.
Just beautiful voiceover work on that show, I want to say, to all the people that do the voiceover on there.
I wonder who
Brent,
to.
No,
finger
see,
on the names of any
Yeah,
of
he's
people,
trying to get people to listen to it. You're pushing people away.
I know. What bad marketing.
Sorry, I interrupted to plug myself. Keep going, sir.
It's a
Brent
normal occurrence.
Can be heard in many episodes of Somewhere in the Skies,
nice.
Guys.
Screaming outside, let me in!
It's like Zach Morris at the prom. Yes. Sorry, I don't know where the fuck that came from.
Good. That was a deep, deep pull.
Thank you.
oh, by the way, I had an interesting night once with Dustin Diamond. Is that his name?
Oh, wow. Yeah, Screech.
I had an interesting night with him in New York City before he unfortunately passed away. That's a story for another time. I'll have to come on your Patreon or something, Brent, to talk about that one. But anyways, so the new book is 50 of what I consider the most compelling stories that have ever been submitted. And when I say, you know, compelling, that doesn't take away from the other stories that have come in. These are just the ones that I thought would really resonate with people and show that everyday person who has never thought about UFOs in like a serious way to kind of look at it and be like, huh, there must be something to this. So,
well, that's exactly what Kevin was saying, how he felt after reading this.
Yeah,
is,
exactly.
You know, I've never, not that he hasn't, it's not in his wheelhouse. Let's put it that way. And then he was like, man, these are real people. Wow. You know? In fact, you pulled a quote.
I did. So at the very beginning of the book, Ryan, you have this quote from Thomas Folder, the 17th century clergyman, which is, seeing is believing, but feeling is truth. And, you know, I'm a skeptic on all things religion, but I was quite interested in this quote. As an anxious person, now I've been told not to react to my emotions, yet this seems to endorse the emotional feeling we get, which drives us to make decisions. Do you read it the same way?
I do. And actually, I'm so happy you brought up that quote, because not a lot of people have asked me why I decided to include that in the book. And for me, that was kind of my my way of saying to the skeptics, like, just because you haven't seen a UFO doesn't mean, you know, they're not out there. And for the people who have seen them, it's not so much even what they saw, but how they felt during the experience. Again, that's what I remember most about what I witnessed, is not, you know, again, size of the craft or what have you. It's how I felt during it and how I felt, how I came out on the other side from it. So that's kind of why I decided to put that quote in there. Not so much the religious aspect or anything like that, but that just experiencing something, feeling it, and having those emotions that you haven't maybe had before, can really drive you to make different choices, whether in the moment or throughout your life. And look, I never thought I would be talking to you guys in 2023 about UFOs. Like, that was never on my mind when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a baseball player.
Me too.
But this drove me down a different path because of how I felt that night on that dock in 1995. That's
a
really,
okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And I like this too, because it goes a couple of ways. Seeing is believing, but feeling is truth. Seeing things, and I believe this, I saw it, but I say this too, when you're looking at things, I'll believe you because of the way you make me feel, one way or another. You know what I mean? Like, when you're talking to someone, now I know that's not what you're doing in this book, but when you talk to people, you're like, I believe this person, or this guy gives me a different feeling, or this girl gives me a different feeling, or whatever you want to say. So I think that's an important quote. It can be taken in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love quotes like that, is because they can be, you know?
Absolutely.
I don't know. This might be an odd question, or it might be like picking your favorite child, but do you have a favorite type of sighting or a phenomenon to research, to get letters or calls about, or just to hear from others? I know that's a loaded question, but you might have something.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what really stands out to me is the weirder the story, the more I'm apt to quote unquote believe it. Again, like, I don't go into any of these.
Why would they make this up? Why would you even tell me this kind of thing?
So, you know, again, like, I get so many reports of, you know, flying saucers or triangles or lights in the sky, or if it's a close encounter experience, you know, it's the grays, as they call them.
So that makes it like stand out to you above the crowd, so to speak, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, when I get a really unique story, that's when I'm like, wow. And there's one that really always stood out to me. When I first started the podcast, within the first couple weeks of the show coming out, I had a gentleman from Scotland reach out to me. And he had a really interesting UFO sighting back in 1996. His name was Tommy, and he was riding a bike home with a friend of his from school. And they were heading down towards one of their houses. I don't remember whose, but they saw, like, in the middle of the road, you know how sometimes in like potholes in the road, you'll see like an oil slick, you know, like kind of like gasoline collects there or whatnot. So they thought that's what was in front of them. So they planned to go around it the closer they got. But as they got closer to the thing and tried to go around it, it got bigger and it got wider.
Wow.
And they're like, what the hell is going on here?
Fucking
so
venom. I knew it.
Oh, you know where this story is going. So basically, they stop on their bikes. This huge oil slick, as it were, is growing and growing. And then it starts bubbling and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah, like, my mind immediately went to, oh my God, it's a symbiote. Mm-hmm. It's like venom incarnate. But they watch this thing bubble, get bigger. And then, not only is it getting bigger, it's starting to levitate off the ground. So whatever this, what they termed was a black blob, it wasn't just oil in like a pothole. Mm-hmm. It was levitating. It was almost alive. And it just starts getting higher and higher into the sky, growing bigger and bigger. And while this is going on, they said they could smell the worst god-awful smell they've ever had in their entire lives coming from this thing. And then it starts almost electrifying. Like there was electricity coming off of this thing and like sending off sparks into the sky. And it just keeps ascending, and just shoots up like into space. No kidding.
Wow.
And disappears out of sight.
And it started just as a little oil slick spot in the road.
Yeah, man. We're talking like small enough that maybe a tire would go through a pothole.
This is the perfect time for me to remind everyone, keep your bottle of Malort with the lid on it and do not spill it.
That's a public service announcement.
Stuff like this happen all the time. I don't know if you've ever had Malort, but if you have, you would understand that.
Oh, God, it's bad.
we are not sponsored by Malort.
Well, okay, so here's a question for you. Mm-hmm. Any experience can be an incredibly stressful. We know that, you know. So it's hard to say you're going to have a game plan, but I hope you do, and you're the one that talks to these people afterwards. And we all know that a game plan can go right out the window, but what should people try to remember or try to do if they find themselves in their own situation, be it like an oil slick like this or lights in the skies or insert whatever? Do you have like, you know, some tips or tricks or whatever you want to call it?
Absolutely. I mean, I kind of go to like the MUFON field investigators guide, like 101. Like obviously, especially now in 2023, I mean, this black blob of Fife Scotland thing happened back in 96. So obviously they didn't have a cell phone, but come on guys, like it's 2023. If UFOs are really being seen all over the place, we should be getting much more photos and videos of them.
And so always remember, keep it vertical, shake it as much as possible, and film your friends instead of it. So,
please. I mean, obviously, that's the first thing. Yeah. If you can capture this thing somehow, some way, give us some perspective in the video or the photo. If there's something in the background.
Get surroundings. Yes.
So we can see where it's happening, how big or small it might be. Give us the time of day in the video. And just tell us what's happening. Describe it as it's happening. Cause I can't tell you how many, you know, videos I get where, someone will give me a 10-page explanation of what happened. And then I watch the video they send me and I'm like, what? Something does not compute here. just as much context as you can give. Now, what I get a lot is I was in the moment. I didn't even think to do that.
Well, that's what I meant. It goes right out the window sometimes. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, man. And I never fault anyone for that. Like with my sighting, it was so deeply personal that even if I did have a camera on me, I probably wouldn't have taken it out, to be honest. So I get it.
Mike Tyson, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face or see a UFO. Addendum, you know, that's true.
Oddly enough, they feel the same.
Yeah.
They're one and the same. That's my biggest thing. File a report either with local law enforcement, just so it's documented somewhere. I mean, they're not going to just ignore you. At least they shouldn't just ignore you. Or call call New Fork, the National UFO Reporting Center, where, you know, they take down every single UFO report. Doesn't matter how weird it is. Like, that's what it's there for.
Sorry to interrupt. For people who don't know that, or like, how does one? Is there a phone number, a place to find to call that?
Yeah, I don't have it on hand. However, okay.
I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. And they have a website as well.
Website's probably best.
Probably because you can just put in all the information. They actually have it's like a form you fill out.
Yep. Okay, yeah, gotcha.
Or honestly, like, reach out to me. That's what I'm here for. I'm here to hear your story. I may pass it on to New Fork or someone else who can maybe help you try to find an explanation, but that's not what I do. I just want to hear the story. I want to preserve it and I want to put it in this huge database of cases that we can turn to and be like, wow, something is happening all over the world.
Right.
And
that's what they get flaps from. Like, we know this is happening here, which people are seeing triangles, or we know that it's happening here where people are seeing lights or a mist or whatever. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Maybe it turns out, well, they were testing ramjet engines, or maybe it comes out that we don't know. But that's how people figure this stuff out or don't figure it out, you know, is having the tools that they need to do. And that really does help.
Yeah,
it does. And it helps just to like have a conversation. I can't tell you how many people like came to me traumatized or scared about what they saw, but then connected with someone else who saw something similar. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's all they need is someone else to be like, yep, I saw this too. You're not alone. And if that's like what I can contribute to this entire UFO thing, great. I don't want to debunk a UFO case. I don't want to solve this. I'm not Fox Mulder. I'm a listening ear. And that's what I want to do is just show people how human these experiences can really be and that the person right next to you has probably seen something in their life that they also can explain. And that's beautiful to me. Like if that's what can connect us all, these weird experiences that remain a mystery, I think the mystery is worth it.
Amen. Well, we were talking about this, speaking of the mystery, all these things, and Kevin and I kind of liked the same. One of our favorite entries was tapping on the window. Mm-hmm. Kevin, you kind of summed it up.
Yeah. There's a quote in the tapping at the window story, which is, quote, "It's kind of lonesome because you don't really have anybody you can talk to about it," which you were just kind of saying a moment ago, Ryan. Mm-hmm. This is a universal statement, I think. I mean, do you find that the UFO community find each other and find a relief in knowing that they are not alone? And I think that's exactly what you just said.
Yeah.
But if they feel alone outside of you, like what should people be doing? Or what do you think is the best thing other than reporting it like this?
I think honestly, just listening, if that is in the form of listening to a podcast or, you know, watching a documentary about UFOs, just kind of opening yourself up to that world and realizing that you're not the only one. I think that's pretty cool, too. And look, like there's no getting around the fact that there's people out there who are either fantasy prone or
of course
mentally unwell. Or are straight up just bullshitting you and lying to you.
Yeah, just grifters trying to fuck with you.
Totally, man. Like, that's always going to be a part of this community, as it is with many other communities as well. So there will be people to take advantage of that, too. So it's hard, and it's messy, and it's a very weird community to navigate. Like, who do you trust with this life-altering experience you had?
Yeah, well, you know that firsthand, you know?
Like
even people that you are close to, your friends, you go, hey, man, I saw this. You fucking loser, you crazy fuck, you know? And that is human nature. I'm not even shitting on them. You know, I think it's human nature to see something, they didn't even see it. So you see or saw something, you say something, and it's just easier to dismiss you than to confront the what if. So to speak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. And in today's world, you know, post 2017, where everyone is talking about UFOs, I can't tell you how much of a relief that has been. No matter where all of this is leading, this kind of mainstreaming of the UFO topic, the fact that you can have an open conversation about it now, anywhere, at any time, is a huge step.
Congress is having open conversations.
Oh my God, you know? It's crazy, man.
And it's sad that more news outlets aren't reporting on it because it really is mainstream for finally. And I feel like year after year, and we've had this conversation, you know, you and I, the past few years here and there of, you know, disclosure is a dirty word, but these things are coming out and it does feel like we're getting closer to something. You know, hopefully, but whatever that is, I don't know. But I like that at least we can have those conversations without the constant eye rolls.
Exactly. UFOs exist. I don't think there's any getting around that any longer.
Even pretending that the U.S. government wasn't investigating was just stupid. You know, I think, you know, to think that they weren't doing that. And scary to think that people are seeing these things, we know they exist, and they weren't looking into it. Come on. You know.
I know.
Well, along these lines, too, in another entry in the book called Boy Scouts, Wiccans, and the New Jersey Triangle, which is also the name of my second jazz fusion record. So I'm a little upset that they took that from me. But Nonetheless, I digress. The author of that story talks about the, quote, close-minded among us, as we're kind of saying, the eye rolls, as Brent just said. As an expert in the field, how do you generally approach this group? I mean, do you try to persuade, or do you generally just let it be, let it
That's
be?
That's disgusting.
Ugh, love it. I'm going the Lennon route with this, man. Like, let it be. I'm not out to convince anyone. I know UFOs are real. I know that there are things out there that just cannot be explained, but I don't want to force that on anyone else who is not ready to have like a fundamental change in their life. Until you've seen it yourself, like we mentioned earlier, seeing is believing, or if you've had that feeling I've had and many other witnesses have had, I don't blame you for not wanting to talk about it, or even, you know, that it's even there, that it's a thing. We fear the unknown.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real core reason that a lot of people don't want to have these conversations, is because they're afraid that it could be real.
Yeah, that's
and that's
what if I find out threat. That I saw exactly what I think I saw? Ugh, you know, that's a heavy.
Well, you gotta rethink a whole bunch of shit.
Yeah, you know, the world, unless they land and go, hi, can we give you some Bibles and things? The world's going to have a lot of things to rethink, and
no
for better
thanks.
Or worse, you know, and I'm not even meaning that in a rude way. It's just, it brings up so many different conversations in the world, and that's for smarter people than me to discuss, but hey, you know, all right, well, I'm going to,
and that's what I love, Brent, about UFOs is like, they shake everything up. They don't care about our religious institutions or our national borders or our economics or our measly little thruster rockets. Like, they just don't care. No. And I love that. I love that kind of punk rock.
It's our rectums or bust. And that's
all about them. And it's just like,
no, you're like, right. You know, it's like, you know, it's the anthill thing, you know, well, that's terrifying to think of it that way, but you're right though. And, for better or worse, that's what we're dealing with, and I hope to one day understand it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that I will, but my fingers are crossed, probably my toes too. All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
The world is yours. There's nothing off limits. Money, travel, anything. What's the one event in the past that you, if you had unlimited help and access to, you would research?
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to go with probably the most obvious answer, and that's Roswell.
One that you've done in the past, even. I
have done that. That's a good point.
Yeah. No, that's good. There's absolutely. I would have went with why my father watched Hee Haw, but that is a very different conversation. Mm.
And had a Hee Haw hat.
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah.
No, that's and it's one that still leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths on both sides of that conversation, you know?
Absolutely, dude. And it seems like every day there's a new explanation for what it could be. You know, the Air Force even put their stamp of case closed on it with their explanation, which has been basically...
Well, that just means that this needs to be researched further by...
Right. And, you know, I did investigate the Roswell UFO crash on a very limited budget. However, I'm still... investigating it. In fact, I recently acquired some materials from the crash site that were found within the past month. Ooh. That are going to be tested.
Tasty morsels we're getting here.
Yes,
from Roswell. So,
from the Roswell UFO crash site, man.
Roswell, Pennsylvania.
No
though
kidding.
It's very different.
Yeah, very different.
Very different crash.
More of a Quaker type crash.
Exactly.
These are just steel cut oats. Son of a bitch. Oh, that's exciting.
Case solved.
That is really exciting.
Yeah, man. So, like, but again, like, testing these things that are found at purported UFO crash sites are, I can't even begin to explain how expensive it actually is.
Oh, right.
To get,
you know,
metallurgy tests done.
Even to get people to want to do it, or to say give a stamp if they do find something weird.
Yeah. And it's frustrating. But so I'm in the process of working on something like that, but I'm not gonna lie, like it's not easy and it's not cheap. So if I had unlimited funds, I would get as many people out to that crash site as possible and try to find, because come on, like, we can't pretend that the military found every single piece of whatever crashed out there.
Right.
Well, it's just impossible.
That's true. And if I had unlimited funds, I would just buy a ranch and build a space hotel. But that's just me. Well, yeah, I think that's already been done. But God, anyway.
Enough with the space hotel.
Love it.
So I heard through a little birdie you might be working on another book. So we got some more stuff from you to look forward to. Is that right?
Yep, man, the work never ends. I came out with this one, and like the next day, someone was like, "So when's the next one come out?" I'm like, "Come on,
hey, wow. Thanks, Dick."
Yeah, come on. His name is Brent something.
Yeah, he sounds stupid. You've got lots of irons in the fire, like books and everything. Where can everyone find you and what you got going on? And tell them about your, not only that, your shows you're on, your podcast. Give everyone your 411, your info. Where, and we'll have again links to all this in the show notes.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I'm on the current season of Ancient Aliens. I can't believe I'm saying that. A show I've made fun of my whole life, and they've somehow roped me in. But yes, we're on season 19. So it's not even Ancient Aliens anymore. It should just be called Aliens, because we're talking about, like, the Pentagon UFO stuff from last year.
Yeah.
You can catch me on there. I'll be on the upcoming season of Mysteries Decoded, a show I host on the CW network. Other than that, I'm always writing, always podcasting. And yeah, everything I do can be found right at my website, somewhereintheskies.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ryan, so much for coming on here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for putting together another fantastic book. It's great. And hopefully we're going to have, again, links to that as well. Everyone pick it up, read it. And I think it's going to be eye-opening to see, even if you've not had an experience, what people are seeing as told from real people, not always just coming from talking heads, but the people that have lived these things. It's important work that you're doing. Like I said, you didn't even mean to, and you've become an archivist of sorts. So it's great work. And hopefully everyone does that and goes and then checks out all your shows and your podcasts, because they are fantastic.
Thank you guys.
Well, thank you once again. And we are going to go to break, and we'll be back with more Hysteria 51.
Man, it was so much better when Ryan was talking. Brent, just blink at least once. I'm blinking many times because I feel like I'm in trouble.
What? I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you over my awesomeness there.
God, yeah. Awesomeness. Awesome. Jesus Christ.
Speaking of awesome, Ryan Sprague.
Man, that was awesome, man. That was awesome. What a cool guy.
He finally got rid of that restraining order, so you guys got to be on the same show together. Did that feel good? That felt good, right? I'm not supposed to say these things. Sorry.
Jeez.
You got to start filling out your rider so I know what I can and can't say before
the show. The only thing on my rider you need to pay attention to is the color of the M&Ms.
That is true. Speaking of M&Ms, UFOs! Kevin, if you learned anything from this episode, what is it? It's that you gotta have a game plan when you see stuff in the skies or underwater. Unidentified submerged objects are a thing also.
True.
So, I don't know, man. Like, do you think that you would have the wherewithal to... Well, this is a twofold question. The wherewithal to try to do your due diligence and be in awe and also take the video and the pictures and stuff you need. And then two, would you come forward and tell people?
To the first one, I, like everybody else, would like to say that I would, but if it is something so overwhelming, you know, Ryan kept referring to how personal the situation is, right?
And that is a very important
part of it. I have to imagine that if it was that overwhelming, you know, I don't know if I would have the wherewithal to point my camera in the right direction or, you know, take the context as you guys were talking about. Mm-hmm. Second, would I share with people? Yeah, I can't shut up. I talk about shit that troubles me or confuses me ad nauseum. And
you are
this would be no different.
Coming to me talking about shit that no one gives a shit about.
What was that?
And the Beatles is what I was talking about. And that's where that is going. And
that's weird because, oh man, I'm just, wow. That's weird. My head just exploded. Did you see that?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's not good for the health.
Mm, well.
What about you, though? What would you do?
Yes, I've for better or worse, I come forward with things like that. And I've also had things I've come forward with that people just rip into and shit on and tear apart. And I go, well, that's my truth. That's what I saw. And I'm not making it up. And you can believe me or you're not. And that sounds great. But then you go, please believe me. You know, it's like like Dave Chappelle, you know, it's please believe me. That's silly. But it's true. Like, you feel that way sometimes.
And again, one of the things that drew me to a lot of what's in this book is the same idea that I talk about on Sad Times, which is none of us are alone.
Yeah.
And this offers the way that he is archiving collecting these stories.
Yeah.
Offers people a chance to feel less alone and realize that they are a part of a community. And that, I don't care if it's about UFOs, if it's about anxiety, whatever. Life is hard enough, but when you know that you're part of a community, it becomes just that much more bearable and easy.
And that's one of the good things, and he started to bring this up, that's one of the great things about the internet, is for better or worse, no matter what you're into, there's a community. And a lot of times that's great, and a lot of times it's not, as we've seen, but that's neither here nor there, you know? And it's very good that you can go and talk to people and hopefully have non-judgment, you know, at least an outlet or a place to go.
Yeah, and it is hard because I'm still skeptical of a lot of this stuff. But at the same time, I think, why would everybody be bullshitting about this? And also, it does force you to be like, well, I thought I had the world figured out. I have nothing figured out. And I would, if I may speak for all of humanity, I would guess that a lot of us don't have much.
You're who we would choose, so go for it.
Oh, yeah. Is it me?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be George Clooney?
No, it's you.
Okay, cool. Well, wow. Anyway.
I don't know what to say.
God. I just want more gray hair in my beard, so maybe I'll look like George Clooney, but it's not working out so far.
I have more gray facial hair than you. It's true.
Why do you guys... What did you say? It's not a contest, Brent. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm trying to speak for all of humanity.
Yes, keep going.
I think that we all, to one degree or another, think we have X, Y, or Z figured out.
Mm-hmm.
And we probably have a lot less figured out than we think we do.
Amen. Well, I think that's as good as anything to leave everyone on is know that we don't have shit figured out, but we're trying.
Keep trying.
What is it that you always end Sad Times with?
I always try to end it with saying that no matter the situation, there is always room for kindness and grace, with yourself.
Yeah, I think that fits in with all of this, you know, and no matter what you're going through and you've seen these things, you're not alone. And be good to yourself, and I think good things will come to you. And go check out this book and everything from Ryan, because it's definitely worth doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And check out Sad Times.
Yeah.
With non-Ryan.
Non-Ryan.
Yeah.
Or
I can't think of the guy who hosts it.
It's the spokesman for humanity.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Me.
Kevin K. Crisp.
That's me.
Kevin Crispin. All right, kids. With that said, I've been Brent.
I've been Kevin.
He's been Conspiracy Bot. Oh, no, he hasn't.
It was terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. We'll be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite. Join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.